John, I know pilots typically think that Big Brother is always in our face, you know, regulating this and regulating that. But boy, in the area of training, that is hardly the case.
Absolutely, Bob. And that's really one of the things that I wanted to bring out in this scenario is that there's a lot of regulatory stuff out there that it seems to me it kind of gets published in a vacuum. There's new procedures all the time. There's new equipment, new approach procedures, departure procedures, things like this. And there's really no regulatory requirement for any training for any general aviation pilot. And that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up, because it is it's a hot topic.
So what does a conscientious pilot do? I mean, the guy you had in your scenario, was a 9 on a 10-point scale as far as, compliance and trying to do the right thing. And here he was a real problem on this day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why you can't stop learning. You really have to, in the absence of any employer-provided or structured program, it's a real challenge for a general aviation pilot to construct a meaningful syllabus, if you will, or program that's going to enable you to keep current with stuff.
I think this is a classic case of not knowing what you don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see any way an instrument pilot who keeps himself current, particularly one who doesn't do IPCs, would even know that there's an issue here.
Right.
Just
right.
Not in contact with this.
And I think, and on a larger sense, that's really a failing of the whole system. I think starting from the top down, the FAA, it establishes something like this. They publish it. They train the controllers for it. And then that's pretty much the end of the ball. There's really a big disconnect in the system.
But if indeed, and we know, we've all said 1,000 times, regulations are written in blood, and until you start hurting people or killing people, and then we have a new regulation and then everybody screams, you're in our face. But there's a need here. There's a real need for training on the part of the general aviation pilot. But unless you mandate it, how do you get them to do it voluntarily, Wally?
Well, in this case, our pilot took regular instrument proficiency checks. He had a good attitude, but it kind of sounds like he took them with the same instructor all the time. And certainly an instrument proficiency check is a good thing to do, but it's only as good as the instructor that administers it. It can be really good and really thorough, or it can be rather brief and still comply with the regulation. So,
and who knows whether the instructor was current on
right.
this topic.
So you go over to the other airport and 3 trips around the pattern and 100 bucks later he signs you off.
And it's important, I think, to do these sorts of things with different instructors over time because
yep.
you're going to get different views and some will be thorough and some may not be.
Well, and it's not just the instructor or the airport you're going to. It's also the environment. I mean, yep. his IPC was probably very applicable to 99% of his flying. It could have been a great instructor who was very current, who didn't bring up SIDS because, when do you ever use a SID?
We're out here in West Texas.
Right. And he tailored it to the pilot. So we can even give the instructor the benefit of the doubt that just didn't even come up. Probably more to the point in terms of training is to say, wow, I'm going to be flying into Houston. I never do that. That's when you need to meet up with instructor and be like, hey, can we just go over getting in and out of Houston?
Right.
That was the missing training piece.
So, Bob, we were talking earlier off mic and you were talking about some of the special emphasis items that your POI is talking about.
Well, yes. There have been a number of violations on SIDS, particularly Climb Via, because the pilot doesn't understand how to execute this properly. And it is a little bit different. And there are a whole bunch of rules that apply to it. Of course, those are in the NBAA document,
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, which is pretty comprehensive.
But there's the big picture and the little picture here. The big picture, the guy should have known how to fly a SID appropriately, okay? So ahead of time, he should have learned how to do that. And then there's the real picture in real time. Here he is in his airplane, given a SID, and he taxis out clueless. So we have the big problem. We have to figure out how to get the guy that training before he goes into Houston. But we need the real world answer to what this guy does when he receives this clearance and how much time it takes him to catch up with his airplane before he becomes a big problem in the system.
Well, one of the ways you can get around that is to not be surprised by the SID that you're going to get. And what I mean by that is actually file the SID in the transition that you expect or that works for your direction of flight. That way, you are proactively saying, give me this transition. I've used that pretty successfully when I've gone into the Dallas area. I've gone into the Charlotte, North Carolina area. I've gone to places where I don't normally fly. And at least there's a very good chance that I'm going to know pretty much ahead of time how I'm going to get out of that airspace. I've told ATC that's what I want to do, and they usually give it to me.
But Tom, you know, you're a high-time CFI, and you know that. I'm talking about the, you know, the 1,500-hour pilot who's conscientious but just doesn't even know that, you know, that he should apply, you know, that he should file the SID that he wants to fly.
He doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Right. Exactly.
But he did have a clue. Okay. And the first clue was the clearance didn't come in the craft format. His instructor taught him that format, and he recognized that it wasn't in the format and said, I'll figure it out on the fly.
And he left the ramp.
And he left the ramp. Okay. That was the first opportunity to correct it. And you go back to the controller and say, you didn't give me everything here, or, you know, there was an opportunity to stop it there.
Right. That's the key. Leaving the ramp unclear.
Yes.
I mean, it's perfectly fine to go back and, you know, ask again, I need a piece of more information here. I'm confused. If it's a busy frequency and everything, or you happen to pick a time of day when they're really loaded up, you might not get your answer right away.
You might be on the ramp for a while.
And the other option, technically, that he has is to refuse the SID.
Right.
He could say, no SID. I can't do this. I need the full clearance. And again, if it was a busy day, if he did it during a push, forget it. You know, he's going to run out of fuel just sitting there waiting. But, you know, if it was off hours, there is a chance the controller would be okay, and just read the whole thing. I'm going to handhold you out of my airspace. Nothing's going to get broken. It, you know, we're all people. It does happen. So there is that. But I agree, the real mistake is leaving the ramp unclear.
Right.
He missed a good opportunity to take a Bob Martin's timeout right there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, you know, once again, the real key here is, you know, how often does a pilot have to update, you know, their knowledge level? Once a month, once a quarter, and okay, there's a frequency, and then how do you do it? We talk about finding the right instructor. Well, yeah, there's a lot of instructors out there that don't have the real-time current information.
Well, that's a completely separate issue that we can come back to, is the instructor's responsibility to stay on top of things. But an individual instrument pilot really needs to stay with the literature also. Most pilots subscribe to a number of periodicals. They listen to things like pilot workshops. They do AOPA online courses. You really need to build that into a regular regimen where you're ensuring that you look at the right things. I get a ton of aviation magazines, and most of them, and I want to read about the guy who flew the P-51 Mustang, or I want to do this. Some of the lesser read articles are the really good informational articles. And the real challenge is that these things are somewhat of the flavor of the month sort of items. When this particular climb via rule came out, every periodical had an article about it. Well, they covered that. All right. Couple of years ago now. So this listening to this particular roundtable should prompt pilots to look at the last couple of years of issues of whatever they've got lying around the FBO or in their own office or something, and see, well, did I miss anything? Because once it makes that editorial cycle, it's not likely to come up with any regular frequency. So I guess the short version of that is try to get a cross-section of subscriptions that cover IFR procedures, and then diligently look at those, look through the tables of contents of those, and keep them as resources for that time that suddenly you're going to go into Houston. You might have to deal with this sort of thing.
Excellent advice.
Yeah. I think also, if I could just, you know, jump in to follow it, you really need to have some kind of structure to that, though, too. And it's I think we had talked about this in another roundtable about the professional pilot versus the business pilot, and how a professional pilot dedicates time. You know, an airline pilot, every 6 months you're going through a recurrent training. So why not make a schedule for yourself and set aside some time? Every 6 months, I'm going to spend at least an hour or two researching a topic or, you know, some sort of formality to this. Flight instructors have to do this every 2 years. And there's a ton of information that comes out on whether it's an online resource or you know, you have to sit down for 16 hours and read through whatever's new. Why not try and emulate some sort of training program like that for yourself?
Tom, your suggestion about the monthly publications is excellent, but there's also some very good reference materials, and a conscientious pilot needs to have a current copy of the Aeronautical Information Manual, perhaps the Instrument Flying Handbook, the Instrument Procedures Guide. All of these things discuss these things, and typically, I think pilots buy those things when they take a check ride, and then they've had that old one around for about 10 years. They need to keep those reference manuals current as well.
They no longer have to buy these things. They're available on FAA.gov, right. current editions.
John, doesn't the NBAA offer some help in this dealing with this problem?
Absolutely. And I think they were one of the leaders in recognizing that there was a huge gap between the knowledge that the operators have and what was expected of them to comply with both the climb via and descend via. They have a web page, and it's pretty easy to search. And on that is it's an almost 100-page document that details in scenario format all the possible scenarios situations that you could run into in these and the appropriate action. There's also a slideshow that accompanies it, a PowerPoint slideshow. A lot of it is geared towards high altitude jet operations and things like that, but it would behoove any pilot to sit down and go through that to gain a better understanding of this.
You know, but getting that information, I think we all agree the information is out there, but building that bridge, and I mean, there's hundreds of flying clubs and organizations out there. And boy, I think all of them have a responsibility, you know, to take advantage of the talented people in the club, you know, to bridge to those that, you know, are not as conscientious, because it's in all of our best interest. I mean, in aviation, we are our brother's keeper. And if there are people out there aviating, I mean, this guy was in the scenario, was trying to do his best. And yet he was a dangerous pilot out there on that given day through no fault of his own. So we need to build bridges. And I think, you know, I think people have to be more responsible about trying to be proactive in getting the information down to the lowest common denominator, because we're only as strong as our weakest link. We've heard that. And a weak link can make a bad day for you or I operating in complex airspace.